Going Linux, episode 346, listener feedback. Welcome to the Going Linux podcast. I'm your host, Larry Bushy.
And I'm your co-host, Bill. Whether you're new to Linux, upgrading from Windows to Linux, or just thinking about moving to Linux, this podcast will provide you with valuable information and advice that will help you in Going Linux.
We hope that you'll find this and all of our episodes helpful in learning about Linux and open source applications and using them to get things done.
If you want, you can send us feedback at our email at goinglinux@gmail.com or leave a voicemail at 1-904-468-7889.
In today's episode, listener feedback. Hi, Bill.
Hello, Larry. How are you today?
All right, here we are on our new recording day.
Yes.
Yeah, so how are things going for you?
Things are good.
on this wonderful Friday.
Well, I'm off on this wonderful Friday. That's a good thing. Mm-hmm. It was a rough week at work, but it's pretty much over. Everything's cool. But I have to ask the minions for help.
Oh, okay. What do you need?
Okay, so I have an Alienware 17R4, so it is the most troublesome computer to get Linux on and then to get it running. I have went through distro after distro after distro. Let me just top them off. Arch, OpenSUSE, Debian, plain Ubuntu, Ubuntu Mate, Ubuntu Studio, Fedora, Integros, I think is how you say it. I even tried Pingai, and then I did one of my favorites, PC Linux OS. Out of all those, and I tried Savion too. Savion didn't work. Fedora didn't work. Plain Jane Ubuntu didn't work. I couldn't get it to load. Okay. Tried everything. Googled it. Okay. Regular Arch didn't work. Manjaro locked up. PC Linux OS, I could get and I could install it. And Ubuntu Studio, I could get and install. But I was wanting to really try an Arch distribution, so I tried the Integros. If I'm saying it wrong, I'm sorry. But it loaded up and it got to install, but the keyboard stopped working. Now, granted, you got to understand, I had Ubuntu Studio on it, and Ubuntu Studio works fine. But none of the Arches, none of the Red Hat ones would work, except for the PC Linux OS. And I really wanted to try that the Integros one really, really badly. And I battled it and battled it and battled it. It's something about this. I don't know. But it seems like some installers, because if they've tweaked install a little bit, it works. But even plain Jane Debian wouldn't work on it. And I don't know what it is. I've looked and looked. So anybody that uses Integros or Arch or Manjaro, if they have any ideas, any hints about how to get it on the machine and work, please send us some email, because I sent you a message on Discord telling you that it had failed it and I had to go through all the whole boot manager thing again.
Yeah.
It was horrible. But you know, Ubuntu Studio runs great. Not a problem.
You're trying to dual boot this, right, with Ubuntu
no.
Studio? Oh, you're trying to replace Ubuntu Studio?
Okay. Yeah, I'm trying to replace Ubuntu Studio because I wanted to try the Arch, especially
Right.
the we've went done so many. Most of the ones we recommend are Debian based. And there's nothing wrong with Ubuntu
Right.
Studio. It's one of my favorites, along with PC Linux OS.
Right.
But I wanted to broaden horizons and see if this these new Arch like Manjaro and this Integros would be a good for new users, and they seem to be pretty good. But I wanted to actually see it, and I was trying to put together a show on installing first impressions. And man, I can't get it to install. I don't care about the regular plain Jane Fedora because I wouldn't recommend that to an absolute beginner because of the hassle it is to to get Skype and all that other stuff that people need so if anybody has any ideas please send an email, tell me I'm an idiot, tell me what I did wrong, anything. But I don't know, Larry, it's just I think it's because it's the Alienwares are so they're kind of geared toward gaming. And they have some extra keys on the side. I don't know if it's a keyboard driver issue or it's still too new. But it's, Alienware was owned by Dell, so you'd figure it would work.
Have you tried the Dell support site?
Yeah, I went through it. I did the Google search, the Bing search, the DuckDuckGo search. I went to the forums. I mean, I can't find anybody. I guess I'm the only weird person who wants to put it on my machine instead of just using it as gaming. But anyway.
Yeah, and you switched off Secure Boot, right?
Yep. Well, I went I switched for the boot mode from UEFI to Legacy. Uh-huh.
Right. Okay, that's okay. Step 1. Yep.
Secure Boot off. Set legacy ROMs enabled. It said that had to be enabled for to boot. So I just left it because it kind of defaulted to that. Boot order would be USB. I have a rewritable USB drive.
Sure.
I also tried using a USB stick that I just finally gave up. I just burnt the CD and it always works. Then it would boot to the hard drive, and then I think the others was look for the network to boot or whatever.
Right.
But this is kind of that hybrid system. It has that flash drive. It has that solid state drive, and then it has the 1 terabyte drive spinning.
Yeah.
So. Trim was enabled on with the Ubuntu Studio. I found the commands for that, and it was enabled. So, someone told me to turn off the trusted platform module that might be causing a problem. So I disabled that. Another one they said you can turn off is the trace route. That's built into the chip. I guess that's for when you're in, in large organizations. So I turned that off, and the kind of interesting thing about that is to get to any of these to really boot, you had to turn off. You had to in the boot menu ACPI. ACPI.
I might be getting it.
And then it would boot. But if you left it on, no, it would just stop. And that was a suggestion too. So I don't know. You have any ideas?
I don't. I first of all, I'm not familiar with the Alienware computers. Although they're made by Dell, they are different. Different hardware, different form factor. And you've gone through all the things that I would think of. Well, let's see what our minion network has to say. Maybe somebody's actually done this. The only thing that I was thinking is that some of the distributions have not gotten the install. I guess they used to call it a shim. I don't know whether they still do or not, to make it installable and bootable on UEFI computers that use UEFI rather than BIOS. But since you put it into legacy mode, that shouldn't be a problem. I don't know. I'm kind of at a loss.
And the last thing that I also, someone suggested updating the BIOS to the current, which I did.
Right. Okay.
And so right now I'm running a dual boot Windows 10 and Ubuntu Studio. But just to bring, you know, I know this having the problems with this getting stolen, so why would you bother? Well, apparently Microsoft has released a new Windows 10 with a complete new features and everything. Mm-hmm. And my current Windows system, remember, this is only barely a year old. And so just to kind of give everybody a chuckle, is that it says the new upgrade to the Windows 10, you know, it's still, they leave the name, but it's a total rewrite according to their website. It says, your hardware is not supported on this version of Windows, and the computer's listening. Year old.
Yeah.
So, oh, great. So there's always problems, and that's a major problem. I've read on their forums too, is that because I was like, I wonder what's wrong with my machine, and they say, oh, you don't want to install those for about 6 months because you'll have problems. They've been having problems with this install. So I'm sitting there going, okay. So if you kind of look at it, Microsoft, a massive corporation that has people just, you know, paying these developers, and they still can't get it right. So I really can't blame Linux. I'm having some install, trying to get installed. I mean, they're having problems with their system, and they have all these people being paid all this money to do it, and they can't do it. So in a way, I think Linux is at least as good or better as far as, you know, driver support and stuff. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's something that's not even a year old, and they say, well, your hardware is not supported. And it's not this exotic hardware. You know, it's NVIDIA, NVIDIA video card, Intel motherboard, has a Western Digital drive, it has a Samsung solid state drive. So I'm sitting there going, I don't know. So anyway, if Minions can help me, I'd appreciate it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll leave it in their hands for now. See if we can do that. Yeah. All right. Well, shall we get into our emails?
Yes. Sorry for the rant, guys. So help me out.
All right. Okay, our first email is from Daniel, who is talking about Discord accessibility. Hello, one and all. Mumble's connection button cannot be clicked with Orca's review mode, no matter what I do. I am using Ubuntu 18.04. Any other voice chat program out there that is accessible? And by accessible, he's talking about accessible to a screen reader so that blind users can use it. I must report that Discord is not accessible at all. I got the word from the Discord help desk. So, yeah, it's really unfortunate that the Discord is not accessible. And Bill, have you run across anything that is a voice communication for Linux that would be accessible that you're aware of?
Okay, so Discord isn't, and Skype's not exactly that friendly either.
No.
Let's see.
I've gone to the Alternative 2 site, and they talk about Tox, T-O-X, but they don't give any indication as to whether or not it is accessible. They talk about Slack as an alternative to Skype. Well, that's not what he's looking for. Signal.
I don't I don't know.
Wire.
It's what about I don't know. Is Google Hangouts accessible?
Google Hangouts is browser-based, and I would expect that as long as your browser is accessible, it would be. But I've seen some browser-based applications that don't conform to normal standards, like switching between buttons using the tab key and things like that. So I haven't tried it, but that might be an alternative for you, Daniel. So if anyone out there, again, Minion Network, if anyone has used anything for Linux that is a voice communication software for Linux or that works on Linux, let us know.
Yeah, we're putting the Minion Network to work this week.
We sure are.
Jeez. Okay. Our next email comes from George, and he asks for a book. Okay. He said, "Have you considered releasing one or more of your books for free, like the first one? I don't think I can afford the $10 for just one book. Also, the CC by 4.0 means that any commercial party would give away your books for free. Look at other licenses," and he gives the Creative Commons org with their license pages in the show notes, and said,
Yep.
"Sincerely, George." And for anybody that doesn't know, Larry's written how many books now? Two or three? You've written two. And so the first one, which I bought Larry, I still haven't got it autographed. I got that from what was I got it from Amazon, and yeah, it was I enjoyed it. It's still, but I have it on my desk right now, and that was it was a not real thin, but it was a smaller book. But your other book is a considerably bigger, and it's in color and everything, right?
Yep, exactly. Yeah, and it's more than $10, but yeah.
But it's also I've looked at it while we were. I haven't bought it yet, but I plan to. It's a lot thicker.
It is. It's got a few more pages. It's got a lot more information in it, and it's built from a built. It's written from the perspective of somebody using Ubuntu Mate 17.10. So you can
Okay.
anticipate that we'll have an update, second edition in the works. But yeah, it's available. And George, one of the reasons I use the CC by 4.0 license, which is a Creative Commons license, is because it can be given away for free. It can also be purchased. And what I've done is, if you want to get it through Amazon, if you want a print version, that has a price tag associated with it. But if you want an ebook version, you can purchase an ebook version from Amazon. Or for the first book, I put a link on the article in the website about the books. And if you just click on the book cover, there's a little graphic there with the book cover on it. If you just click on that, it will download a PDF version for free. And I didn't have that link on the second book. So George, I sent you a link to download a copy of the second book, a PDF version of the second book for free. And I also put a link on that web page. We'll have a link in the show notes so that anyone can get a PDF version of that book for free. So you can get the book for free. If you want, you want to use it on your Kindle or other e-reader, you'll need to go and purchase it. Or if you want a paperback copy, you'll need to purchase that as well. But I figured, hey, I can give away a PDF version for free. And George, you've got it.
So I want to touch on that for just a minute. I would
Yeah.
say your books are more, I would call them a new user's technical manual,
Yeah,
basically. And
exactly.
technical manuals have always been more expensive. And well, I think your second book's what, about 24, 25 bucks, something like that.
Yep.
So, whatever it is, I didn't even look at it, but that's still pretty affordable. I and I've spent When I just bought this new Python coding book, it was $69. And so I'm not trying to say that it's cheap, because $25 is $25, but technical manuals and books in general, because I buy 10, 12 books a year on for something, and books are more expensive. So I don't know, Larry. I would say I know you're not doing it for the money, because we talked about it off. You just kind of did it for the joy of it, and because you're not
Absolutely,
the
yeah.
what do they call it? The royalties. We were laughing about. You might buy a cup of coffee in a year from Starbucks, type of
Yep,
thing.
exactly. Yes.
So I mean, it's just I think you did a good option. I was reading while you were talking that CC BY 4.0, and that is a good license for what you want to do. I mean, you're using an open source license, and you do an open source podcast, and there's nothing that says that, if someone wants to buy a manual, well, we can't give them the materials for free. I mean, the PDF is there's no materials. You can print it out if you want, but you're using your own materials in. But to get, the book published, bound, and sent out costs somebody some money. So if you want it, like I want a hard copy instead of going through a PDF. And if you kind of look at it, my time's worth a lot more. I don't want to print out, 125 pages when I can just say, "Hey, here's your $20. Give some of my book," type of deal. But yeah, I like I told you, I said I thought the first one was really good and extremely affordable. I just you gotta understand, you can get it for free, and then you can read it on your Kindle or tablet, or if you want a hard copy, you can get it. You have to pay for it to cover the materials, because I think when you submitted that, didn't you tell me that they pretty much tell you what you have to list it for?
Yeah, pretty much.
So
And the
anyway.
$24, the way I came up with listing it for that price, and I certainly don't get all 24 of the dollars, was I made the first book as low cost as possible. And then the second one, I made it a price so that I would earn the same amount of commission in dollars. And because it's a bigger book, and since it's in color and the first one was not, Amazon wants you to list it for a higher price because it costs them more to print it. So, the commission on the second book for me is the same as the commission on the first book, and it's got to be a higher price because it's a bigger book and better quality. So, there you go. That's the book.
Well, like I said, I think that doing it the way you're doing it, it gives anybody that can afford it and they want a hard copy to get it, and people that say, "Hey, I can't afford $20, but I really would be useful for me," they can go download it and look at it and use it. So you're not excluding anybody. Everybody pretty much has access to it. You just have to cover the cost of printing if you want the hardback.
Yep, exactly. And it's in true open source spirit, I make it available for free, but I also, appreciate you purchasing the book if you want to support me and my efforts and my continued efforts in authoring these books. So, thank you if you've purchased the book. I appreciate it. Okay, our next email is from Tom, who commented on our last episode. Great podcast episode, Larry and Bill. Best and probably most useful compare and contrast overview of Linux package tools for noobs I've yet encountered. Might have saved me a world of trouble had I heard about it a year ago. or maybe not. It takes a bit of repetition for the really important stuff to sink in sometimes. Along those lines, would you be so kind as to provide or publish the text of Deputy Chief Minion for Package Management Ken Laba's original submission? It's nice to have a stationary document to look at when you're consolidating information and trying things out. Thanks for all you do, championing freedom and fostering success in the land of Linux. What a tagline.
Wow.
That's what we do here. We champion freedom and foster success in the land of Linux. Tom, let me ask Ken if he's okay with me taking his notes and publishing them as an article on our website, and then you'll have a written version. I think it's a good idea.
Okay. Our next email comes from Highlander, and he gave us a tip on getting video working on Fedora 28 for a computer running Linux Mint 18. He writes, "It took a lot of tinkering and fussing about to get it working, but by following this pattern, you will get your video card working in Fedora 28. 1. Install video card hardware into PCI slot. 2. Boot into Linux Mint 18. 3. Find the Fedora 28 ISO file on your hard drive. 4. Right-click on the Fedora 28 ISO, then click on Media Writer. In 5 minutes, you will have a USB bootable Fedora 28. From within Mint 18, use gparted to nuke and pave the partition you want to use for Fedora 28. 6. Use the flash drive version of Fedora 28 to boot your computer. 7. Follow on-screen instructions for installing Fedora 28. 8. Shut down computer after installer completes. 9. Pull out the video card. 10. Boot off your hard drive into Fedora 28 using VGA, not your video card. 11. Go to the website https://rpmfusion.org/configuration to download and install your video drivers for Fedora 28, both the free and non-free drivers. 12. Shut down the computer. 13. Install video card hardware. And 14. Boot into Fedora 28 off your hard drive with your video card."
Okay, so that sounds like good advice. As long as you're not using a laptop where you can't remove the video card.
I think he was talking more about the desktop. But yeah, that's sure. Actually, that's pretty clever. I didn't think about that.
Yeah, just remove the thing that gives you the problem on installing. get the drivers, install the drivers, and then put the card back in. Yeah, that's pretty cool. That works.
All right, good. Thanks for the tips.
Yeah, thanks, Highlander. Leonid asked about our opinions of several desktop environments. "I like your podcast and have some questions for you. You always recommend Ubuntu Mate for users, but I really would like you to ask your opinion about other desktop environments. Mate versus GNOME versus Cinnamon versus KDE, and also would like to hear your pros and cons for Ubuntu versus Linux Mint versus Fedora versus OpenSUSE." Okay, Leonid, we will we'll take a look at doing just that. It sounds like
in a podcast.
That's an episode. Yeah. Yeah, I like it. If we can get those distributions installed on your computer, Bill, we might be able to do that.
Okay. I will say, I know Larry likes Ubuntu Mate.
I do.
And he's okay with GNOME. I like Mate and Cinnamon. And this is a caveat. I like the PC Linux version of KDE, and that's about the only one I do like. And because they do little things and how they set up. Okay, but I think we should make that a podcast.
Yeah, I think so too. Bottom line on our recommendation is use what you like, because each of these desktops is implemented differently in different distributions. So yes. If you want to try it, you can fiddle around, you know, install whatever you want for a distribution, and then you can install the desktops and you can fiddle with them. And if you want to spend the time to learn all the ins and the outs of something as complex as KDE, then great. But if you want to try out different, as they advertise it, sane choices for how these things are configured out of the box. You could try multiple distributions, maybe in a virtual machine or something, and give them a try. So, you know, that's just some general recommendations for people wanting to try them out. Okay.
All right.
Joran provided some advice on Garmin GPS. I remember we had a listener asking about the Garmin Etrex. Let's see what Joran has to say. Hello, I'm writing regarding the question about the Garmin Etrex 10 in your recent episode. While I have to admit, I never achieved formal minion status, possibly because I never applied, I still have some information to share. I have used two Garmin Etrex devices, Legend HCX and 30X. I've used them mainly for geocaching. To add caches to the older Legend model, I use GPS Babel, which I'm assuming is a package or software plugin or something, which talks to the device via a TTY device, which gets created when I connect via USB. With the newer 30X, I mount it as a mass memory storage device and just copy the GPX file to it. To get current maps, I use OpenStreetMap. To install maps, I use the mass memory interface, still over USB, for both devices. Details on how to do that can be found at it's an OpenStreetMap link. We'll include it in the show notes. I'm not sure if the Model 10 supports additional maps, though. So, both these devices work fine under Linux, at least everything I have tried. I have no direct experience with the Etrex 10, but I would expect it to be similar to 30X. They are from the same generation, while the Legend model is older. Interesting. Well, thanks, Joran. That's good advice and way more than I knew about Garmin's GPS devices.
Cool.
So, good. Thank you.
And I bestow honorary minion there.
Yes, of course. No,
you didn't have to apply.
No application.
You wrote in,
necessary.
So you're automatically a minion. So anyway, our next email comes from Rick, and he provides some help for Mike the Blind Guy. Hi, I just heard podcast 344, and I heard the very long email from the English blind guy called Mike. I am a going Linux user, so I know how to dual boot single Linux OS, and I don't understand why Mike needed to buy a special non-Windows laptop. I'd go for a second-hand laptop and run the Linux Mint or Mate or Mate loader. If Mike wants a dual boot or a Linux only, the loader will do this job for him, as the deep-hearted app will tramp over whatever is there, but he would have to have a sighted person to set it up for him. As he is UK-based, as I am, would you like to send my email address to Mike, as I may be able to help him set up a laptop for his use? Kind regards, Rick. Okay, thanks, Rick, for the offer.
Yeah, Rick, that's great. You know, the UK is not as big a country as the United States, but it is a big country, so hopefully you're in somewhere near him making this offer. But I will forward on your email address to Mike and see where it goes from there. Let us know. We appreciate it.
Please.
Thanks. Okay, Matthias provides some advice for Joshua. Hi, Larry and Bill, longtime listener. With regards to Joshua's emails about files being owned by root in his home directory, I find that one situation in which those files can be created is when you copy and paste commands from the internets that start with sudo. While it is true that some programs and services run as root, even if or when they do, they should not be writing files to your home folder. They should use files from the rest of the system's file tree, like slash etc directory. But if you run commands as sudo, any files they create based on the current environment might land in your home folder, but owned by root, as that was the actual user that created them. On the same vein, file permissions don't work exactly as Joshua described in his email either. They are more like a sieve or filter. When a program tries to perform an operation on a file, the operating system, technically the driver for the file system, will check against all permissions on that file, and actually all folders in its path as well, to verify if the operation is allowed. If the other permissions allow the operation, it will be allowed no matter what the other two permissions are set to. If it is not allowed by that, then group and owner permissions are checked. The actual implementation uses all present permissions to calculate a mask, tech lingo for a filter, on which to compare each operation. And that mask can be changed as well. That is what the unmask option for mount does. Adds or remove default permissions on the system. Keep up the good work, Matthias from Argentina. P.S. I hope you consider this email as an application for any Minion Network internship that may be available. Another application.
We have internships?
Matthias, yes. I don't think we have Minion interns. Should we?
No. Well, okay. Wait, I'm unpaid, so we'd have to.
Yeah, well, you're a co-host, though. Come on.
Yeah, but so do we have any unpaid internships? I don't want to affect my
paycheck.
Don't
know. Hadn't thought about it. We'll consider it, Matthias. Okay.
Okay, we'll consider it. We'll name you honorary minion until we get you, we set up your internship.
Yeah. Okay.
See, I made that executive decision.
Yes.
So our next email comes from Daniel. Daniel is trying to write a disk. He writes, "Hello everyone. I have Ubuntu 18.04 and thought of trying Mate. So I downloaded Ubuntu Mate 18.04, then read how to burn to DVD. When I right-clicked on the ISO, there was no write to disk option. I could open with the image writer. But when doing so, image writer would have been able to write this to the hard drive, but the DVD was not one of the choices listed. Yes, you know, yet the blank DVD is listed on the desktop. Is there something else I should do?" Okay, so Larry, is he using a Linux? Because if this is Linux, I tell him the program that will work for him, and it's called Bracero.
Right, exactly. And he is using Linux. He said he was using Ubuntu 18.04. And here's the problem that he's running into. The instructions on the Ubuntu website are for 16.04 before they changed to GNOME 3. And there was a right-click on an ISO image, and it would give you a menu option to write to disk, right from that menu. Mm-hmm. With 18.04, they went to GNOME 3, and that option is not in the right-click menu, the context menu. So if you search further on the Ubuntu website, there are some instructions on how to burn a disk from 18.04, and they request that you install an application like Bracero and use it to burn the DVD. So there you go. Just what you were suggesting, Bill. And it's just a matter of finding it on their website. We'll have a link in the show notes. I sent the link to Daniel, so he's all ready to go.
Yeah, you can find it in repositories. It works really great. I use it all the time. As you, if you listen to the start of this podcast, you'll realize. So let us know if that you get it installed and how that Bracero worked for you.
Yeah. Thanks, Daniel.
Thanks, Damien.
Our last email comes from Aaron, who comments on installing software. "I really enjoy the episode about software using app or apt-get and graphical interfaces. I've been using Linux for quite a few years. To tell you that I am an expert is wrong. I do everything possible to avoid using the command line. The first thing I do when installing a new distro is install Synaptic. As you can tell, I avoid RPM distros. I've been using and trying different types of Linux for quite a few years, and because of the early years of RPM, and if you remember the expression RPM H*LL, I avoid distros like Fedora. Is it possible to get PTSD from using RPM? Question, are some distros harder to put on a thumb drive than others? Struggling with Linhess, L-I-N-H-E-S, a great Myth TV distro based on Arch. I don't know whether some distros are harder to put on USB thumb drives than others. Depends on the size of the drive. Some are bigger than others and won't fit on a 2 gig drive as most distros used to. You may have to go to a 4 for most distros that come with lots of different software packages, but the process is the same regardless of what the distro is.
Yeah, I'm with you on the RPMs. They don't like me. And PTSD, I think I got a few of that with the Fedora.
Yeah.
But no, yeah. Seriously. Some people swear by RPMs. Other people like Debs. Other people like the Arch-based stuff. So anyway, I guess each their own.
Yeah, exactly. Some people swear by them and some people swear at them. But to each their own, as you said, Bill. And yeah, good luck with the installation. I don't think there are any tricks to installing one distribution versus another. If you can download an ISO image, you should be able to use a program to install the distribution onto a thumb drive of adequate size. And you can use, if you're on a Debian-based distribution, you can use the Disks application that comes with most Debian distributions. You can use Disk Writer software like Bracero. You can use the Startup Disk Creator or an application named something similar to that provided by your distribution. I know Mint provides that. Ubuntu Mate provides that. Ubuntu, I think, has something similar. Unit Dubutin is another one that you can use. So a number of different ways to get it done. But I think if you've got an ISO image, it doesn't matter what the ISO image is. It installs to a thumb drive exactly the same way.
Yep. All right.
So, all right. And I think now that is the end of our episodes, or at least the end of our emails. So
yes.
That, I guess, means it's the end of the episode. I know, Bill, we had planned on talking about your installation of another distribution on our next episode, but given your problems with your laptop there, that's probably not going to happen, right?
It might. We don't know. I'll let you know if I've got anything figured out. I'm still researching. It's more like a challenge now, so I'm trying to decide, yeah, is it more stubborn than I am, and I think the consensus was I'm more stubborn. So I'm going to work on it today on my day off because that's what I do.
Okay, well, we'll look forward to that. And if it doesn't happen, we have at least one more Minion-provided content that we could use. And we have plenty of things to talk about. I mean, we had the suggestion on talking about, Mate versus GNOME versus KDE versus Cinnamon. We can do that. Lots of different ideas. So we'll take it one step at a time and keep it a surprise, as always, okay, for our next episode. How's that?
That sounds like a plan. Okay. So until then, you can go to our website at goinglinux.com for articles and show notes, as well as links to download and subscribe.
We are the website for computer users who just want to use Linux to get things done.
If you'd like, you can participate directly with our friendly and helpful community members by joining the discussion in our Going Linux Podcast Google Plus community.
Until next time, thanks for listening.
73.
Theme music provided by Mark Blasco at podcastthemes.com.